1048 Santos versus the United States. We have Mr. Caves.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is David Caves, and I have been appointed to represent Mr. Hilario Santos. The district court erred in denying Mr. Santos' Section 2255 petition for two reasons. First, Mr. Santos made the first showing required under Strickland because he had a viable entrapment defense, and his trial counsel's failure to investigate and present that defense was unreasonable. And second...
Well, I see how... I think an entrapment defense would be impossible here.
Well, I disagree, Your Honor. There are two elements to an entrapment defense, government inducement.
Predisposition, though. How do you get around that?
Well, the problem in this case is that the evidence that was before the trial counsel should have prompted him to investigate further. And so the evidence that we have and that the district court concluded that there was no predisposition was a conclusion drawn from incomplete evidence.
Well, that evidence included that this was the third trip he'd made with this this other help this other fellow.
Yes, Your Honor, but that alone would not defeat an entrapment defense.
Makes it pretty hard to get around the predisposition issue.
That perhaps, but trial counsel still should have investigated to determine. Trial counsel didn't even talk to Martin Marino, the man that called the Summit, Illinois Police Department out of the blue. There were a lot of things that trial counsel could have done to determine, you know, first of all, whether there was government inducement or whether there was predisposition to commit this crime.
This guy obviously was working for the government, wasn't he?
Well, it appears that way, Your Honor. You know, the first record that we have in the evidence that Mr. Marino had contact with the DEA was a telephone call the week of December 8th, just out of the blue. There had to have been contact.
There had to have been.
There just had to be. And any investigation by trial counsel would have learned, you know, exactly what was going on between the government and Mr. Marino. As I mentioned before, trial counsel didn't even make an effort to find Mr. Marino. I mean, for all we know, the government had Mr. Marino set up Mr. Santos. Maybe the government thought that Mr. Santos was a bigger fish than he really was.
That could very well be, but it still is... You have no basis for an entrapment defense if you're predisposed to commit the offense. And as Judge Tinder points out, there were a couple other trips here. And how do you get around that?
But the other trips alone don't defeat a finding that he was not predisposed. This court in Blasingame and several other cases has, you know, articulated five different factors to look at to determine if one is predisposed. One is the character of the defendant. This was a 60-year-old man without a prior drug conviction. He's not the character that's likely to go about looking for this sort of activity. The second is whether or not the government initially suggested the criminal activity, and with a further investigation, trial counsel could have determined that it was indeed the government that planted this idea. The third element is whether he engaged in this for profit. There's really no evidence that was a motivating factor for Mr. Santos. Fourth is whether Mr. Santos was reluctant to participate in this, and he was. The record that we have shows that he repeatedly declined requests to participate. When Mr. Calderon and Mr. Moreno started calling him several times a week, he stopped answering the telephone. I mean, this really isn't a case where he was eager to participate. He wasn't looking to engage in this sort of activity, and you know, based on the record that we have, there is evidence of reluctance and lack of predisposition. But I think the most important point is that with a further investigation, that, you know, reasonable counsel should have investigated further. There could have been more evidence of not only inducement, but also lack of predisposition. In Judge Canelli's order, he even recognized that on page 9, he strongly suggested that reasonable counsel really should, you know, looking at these facts, really should have done some sort of investigation, whether it was talk to Mr. Marino or whatever, just to figure out what was going on. Now, but then the district court seems to have made the same mistake that trial counsel did, was then he looked at the evidence without the benefit of an investigation and said, okay, we know based on these things that maybe there was inducement, but it doesn't seem like it, and it seems like there was predisposition, so therefore there's no entrapment defense.
Wasn't Santos already on probation?
No, Your Honor.
Wasn't that on probation?
If he was, it was for an unrelated offense. He had no prior drug offenses.
Well, no prior drug offenses, but I thought he was on probation. Maybe you could look that up while the government is arguing. Maybe the government knows what the answer to that question is.
Okay. But as I was mentioning about the district court's opinion, it comes to the conclusion that there was no inducement and there was predisposition based on the evidence as it existed without the benefit of an investigation. Reasonable trial counsel should have looked at the facts, should have investigated further, and based on that investigation, there may well have been evidence that could have supported an entrapment defense. Now, the government is likely to argue that Mr. Santos' statement that he wrote to trial counsel would have been admissible evidence, but it would not have been because he wrote that, and that would have been privileged because he wrote that to trial counsel, and that only would have come in if he had testified at his trial. Now, the government obtained that statement pursuant to a proffer agreement and received the statement, in fact, after Mr. Santos's sentence was imposed in April of 2005. And, I mean, just to come back to the facts of this case, I mean, this is what trial counsel knew. Martin Moreno, on the way from Los Angeles to Chicago, calls Agent Kosmowski at the Summit Police Department just out of the blue from the record. It seems like it's out of the blue. The government directs him to the Summit Police Department, outfits him with a wire, and uses him to stage a controlled delivery where they arrested Mr. Santos and the buyer. Then they let Mr. Moreno go. They never charged him with a crime, and the government still contends that they don't know where he is. Reasonable trial counsel would have looked at those facts and would have conducted some sort of investigation. Trial counsel didn't look for Mr. Moreno. The trial counsel didn't even speak to Mr. Calderon, even though he knew where he was. Trial counsel really was under an obligation to investigate this further. Instead, he just said entrapment wasn't tenable. And had he investigated further, there really could have been evidence that the government maybe used Mr. Moreno to set up my client, or we just don't know. It's no use speculating. We just know that trial counsel was under an obligation to investigate further and did not do so.
Well, the government would have to have urged Moreno to set him up. Entrapment is a defense against government overreaching.
Sure.
Not an individual having done that. I'm curious here, what do you really want to get out of this? Vacating the guilty plea and go back to square one, or do you want a hearing on whether this entrapment defense was viable or not?
Well, ideally we would like this vacated. And then the government...
Vacated, and then the judge finds that there's nothing to this entrapment defense. I assume he got acceptance of responsibility here as part of the sentence because he received the minimum mandatory sentence here, didn't he?
He received the minimum sentence, Your Honor.
That be off the table, acceptance of responsibility, if it went back for resentencing?
Sure. That may be a possibility, but we've decided that. I mean, there really is a chance with the entrapment defense that he would be found not guilty, and that's based on that real possibility we've made the calculation that he would like to proceed in this way.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Shakeshaft.
May it please the Court. I'm Tom Shakeshaft. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney here in Chicago on behalf of the United States. The gist of petitioner's argument is that his trial counsel should have investigated more. But that gets cut off when you look at the 25-page statement that the defendant himself provided to his lawyer, in which he admitted to three previous trips delivering cocaine to Chicago. It is full of admissions that he did this. I disagree with counsel. It admits that the reason he did this was for profit. He was unemployed. He needed the money. He did it for all the reasons people become involved in narcotics trafficking. And it's right there in his statement that he provided to his lawyer. The question is not whether that statement's admissible. The question is whether his lawyer knew it when he was counseling him, and he did. The evidence in the record is clear that the defendant provided that statement to his lawyer several weeks, if not months, before the defendant chose to plead guilty in this case.
Was he on probation?
Pardon me?
Was he on probation?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't know. I'd be happy to check. I don't think that he was, but I do know that he had a criminal history that did not make him safety valve eligible. So he did have a conviction in California. I'm not certain whether or not he was on probation at the time or not, but I'd be happy to file something supplementally with the court and to answer that question. The issue, obviously, before the court is whether or not his trial counsel's performance was constitutionally deficient. And in this case, the district court held a lengthy hearing in which he heard testimony from the defendant's trial counsel. He heard testimony from the DEA case agent
By the way, speaking of that hearing, I had the impression from reading this that Judge Cannelli issued an order to your office to respond to the 2255 petition, and your office routinely refuses to respond to those orders?
That's not quite true. I actually got caught in the crosshairs. Evidently, Judge Cannelli had previously issued an order that we respond, and it has been addressed between our office, and there was a meeting that I was not privy to, but I found out about it because evidently I was told by Judge Cannelli that on seven or eight previous occasions he had issued orders for our office to respond to 2255s that through whatever reassignment mechanism was at that point taking place in the U.S. Attorney's office, the assistants who were responsible for them were not routinely getting notice. That's been rectified. So my first involvement in this was to be summoned after Judge Cannelli had issued that order to explain why we hadn't, and it was simply because our office had not gotten notice to the appropriate people. So
now there's a procedure in place.
There is. It's my understanding that members of our office had meetings with certain of the district court judges and that's been rectified. But that is how this all got started. With regard to the substance of this, that 25-page statement makes clear that an entrapment defense in this case was not tenable. He was predisposed, as Judge Cannelli appropriately found. This was a defendant who was not induced by any government agent. The evidence is uncontradicted. Agent Landa testified Martin Moreno was not working at the behest of DEA. As far as the record reveals, Martin Moreno, driving across the country, called a DEA task force officer. It would be pure speculation to determine why he would have done that. Maybe he saw a sheriff in his back window. I mean, who knows why he did it?
He evidence, saw a billboard, if you have drug information, called so-and-so at the
I looked again this morning, Your Honor. There are three places in the record where he says we don't know why he did it, but that
he's pretty odd that you're driving 7 kilos of cocaine across the country and you would just decide. It's like Pulp Fiction where all of a sudden he sees the light. And
it's amazing what a guilty conscience feels.
Yes, all of a sudden.
Your Honor, I limit myself to the record. The testimony is there. He was not working for DEA at the time, and it does appear that the call came out of the blue. Now, obviously, there had to have been a relationship of some sort. He needed to know why to call that agent. But as far as what's in the record, that's it. And for the petitioner to say that there should have been a greater investigation, it's pure speculation as to what they would have found. I mean, it's in the record that after Moreno agreed to cooperate, he disappeared, which is not all that unusual. And as Mr. Sandman said, in this district, it is a valid law enforcement technique to try to continue to work with somebody who's agreed to cooperate. He set up this controlled delivery and then disappeared. Quickly, with regard to the elements of the entrapment defense, all five of them cut against the defendant. He did do this for profit. The character of the defendant, if you review that 25-page statement, it is clear that he was a willing participant in this drug trafficking. There's no evidence that Mr. Moreno was acting at the behest of DEA, so there wasn't any government inducement. And while after he got caught, the defendant has expressed this reluctance to engage in this, as Judge Cannelli found, all somebody needed to do was ask, and he was happy to do so. So an entrapment defense in this case would not have been viable. And to just put an emphasis on something that Your Honor said, were this case to be vacated and to go back, it's a case of be careful what you ask for, because the guideline range in this case, if the defendant were not to get acceptance and testified, which he would have to establish an entrapment defense, would raise his guideline range likely from 168 to 210 months. So any reasonable defense lawyer in the face of putting on this entrapment defense versus and risking a guideline range of 168 to 210 months as opposed to counseling his client to plead guilty in light of the evidence in this case with the knowledge of what was in that statement that had been delivered to him, it is in no way constitutionally deficient. In fact, it might have been, it would have been bad legal advice for him to have advised his client to put on an entrapment defense in this case. And so for those reasons and the reasons articulated in Judge Cannelli's memorandum of opinion, we would ask that the denial of the defendant's 2255 motion be affirmed.
Anything further? Mr. Caves?
Thank you. First of all, the idea that Mr. Moreno would just call the Summit, Illinois Police Department out of the blue is, frankly, it's just nonsense. Reasonable trial counsel would have recognized it was nonsense. It all sounds like entrapment. Reasonable trial counsel would have investigated further whether there was any evidence of entrapment. And sitting here today,
doesn't the evidence show that Mr. Sinan talked with your client about entrapment, and your client said, no, don't bother with that?
Yes, he talked with him briefly, but it seems to have been after trial counsel made the conclusion that it was not tenable. And I think he told Mr. Santos that he believed it was not tenable, and Mr. Santos therefore wanted to go to trial, which Mr. Santos still does, and his chances of acquittal are indeed better than negligible, and I believe that's the standard here. Anything further? Thank you.
Caves, you accepted an appointment in this case, and thank you to you for doing so, and to Michael Best, your law firm. A Milwaukee law firm, by the way, that happens to have a satellite office here in this little city of Chicago.
And they have one in Indianapolis as well.
Yes, watch out, Milwaukee is taking over. Okay, this case.